This podcast is produced by KPP Financial. Steve Peasley, President. KPP Financial. Independent thinking, shared success. And now today's podcast.
You're listening to an encore presentation of Invest Talk. Please call with your questions and comments, though, 888-99-CHART, 888-99-CHART, and Steve will answer them on the next Invest Talk.
Welcome to Invest Talk, above average investing for the average investor. We try to bring you useful information and answer any questions you might have, as long as they're financial. 888-99-CHART is our number, 888-992-4278. Let's go to Cliff in La Mesa. How are you doing, Cliff?
Hey, good, Steve. Thanks for taking my call.
Appreciate you calling.
Could you answer a question on dividends for
sure.
me? On the X day, which is like, what, 2 or 3 weeks before they actually pay the dividend?
Yes.
If you own the stock on the X day, say you own it the day before, and the day after that day you sell it, would you still get the dividend?
Yes. Long as you own the stock on the X dividend date, and that's the date they announce, all people who own the stock today will get a 15-cent dividend when we pay it a few weeks from now. So that's the day you need to own it. You can sell it the very next day, not a problem. And you might be even able to sell it that day, but I wouldn't take that chance.
That sounds good.
Thanks for the call. Appreciate it.
Hey, thanks. Thank you, Steve.
Yeah. So everybody, whenever you hear, well, the X dividend day, and they call it X dividend day, EX dividend day. That's the day you have to own the stock to get the announced dividend they're going to announce on that day. Now, mind you, the stock goes down the exact amount of the dividend they're going to pay. If the dividend's going to be 50 cents, the stock price that day will go down 50 cents. Now, it might be disguised because trading volume, you know, trading up and down, up and down, up and down, might not see it, but it actually does go down the exact amount of the dividend announced on that X dividend date. Dennis in Oakland. How are you doing, Dennis?
I'm doing great, Steve.
Thanks for the call.
I'm 65, and I'm putting some money in the Roth IRA for the next 2 years, like $24K
okay.
with my wife and I.
Okay.
And I think I should just do it. I don't need the money, so I think I should just put it in aggressive for the next 20 years, and then when I'm 85, then there'll be a nice nest egg, additional nest egg. What do you think of that idea?
If you don't need the money, I think it's a great idea.
Yeah, I don't need the money, so.
See, that's the key, because you're at retirement age, quote-unquote retirement age. If you don't need the money and you're willing to let it ride for a number of years, all that growth that the Roth grows for all those years, there's no tax consequence. Not one nickel.
You think the government might change their mind?
I don't think so. Think of the hue and cry that would cause, Dennis. No way. You and I, we'd be marching on Washington, wouldn't we? No, I don't think
it wouldn't be abused, yeah.
So I don't think they're going to change their rules on that. I really don't. There would be such a backlash that everybody who ever even thought about it would get voted out of office. So I don't see it happening. Dennis, I appreciate the call. I really do.
Thank you.
Dave in Carlsbad. How are you doing, Dave?
Hi, how are you? I'm thinking of spending, investing about $10,000 mm-hmm. in money market. And I don't know much about stocks and stuff. I was wondering that if I invest that $10,000 in like 6 months or so, mm-hmm. and the interest that I'm going to get off of that, how is that going to affect my taxes?
Any time that you invest in anything like a money market where they pay you dividends, okay?
Yeah,
they pay you
5%.
That's right. They're going to pay you an annualized 5%. That money is added to your adjusted gross income on your tax return. The bank will send you what's called a W-2.
Like a W-2 form?
Yeah. And they send it like January, February, March, somewhere in there. They're supposed to get to you by the end of January. And that W-2 says, oh, you earned $282 in interest. And when you do your taxes, you have to add that $282 to your gross income. And that's what you pay your taxes, whether you get back money or not, depending on how much taxes you paid during the year, of course. Now, if you don't add it, remember the bank sends that same little form.
Oh, like I'm working for somebody, like an employer that does that.
Yep.
Okay.
Yep, they send it to the government, so the government knows you got that $200 in interest. Mm-hmm. You know, so you got to add it to your thing, or else you're going to get audited someday.
So I'm also planning to open a business. Mm-hmm. If I invest, through my business, not as an individual, but being a CEO of a business, how is that going to affect in taxes? Good, bad?
It's neither good nor bad, and in some ways it's good. When you form a business, you know, initially you usually don't form a corporation. You just do it as what's called a sole proprietorship. In other words, it's your business, it's just you.
Yes.
And it's a sole proprietorship. The income that that business makes is offset by the expenses you incur. Let's say, just pick some numbers. Let's say you make $10,000 in the first month, but it costs you $5,000 to run the business. Now, you can leave that $5,000 in the business, or you can take some of it as a salary to yourself. And if you take it as a salary, that's income to you, and you have to pay taxes on it. The first year of a business, you don't have to pay any taxes till the end of the year. So, Dave, you got to be disciplined by not spending all the money if you have earnings. Because when it comes tax time, they say, oh, you made $42,000, and therefore you owe, you know, $15,000 in taxes. If you spend it all, you're going to be in trouble. But the good thing about being a sole proprietorship and starting a business, things you have write-offs that you don't have as an employee.
Yeah.
You have write-offs like gasoline, car repair. You can write off any kind of business lunch that you have or any. There's certain things you have. Not a lot. Don't think it's a lot. It's not. Dave, good luck.
Thanks a lot. Thanks for your help.
You can call right now and be part of the program. Let's hear about what your talking point is. 888-99-CHART. 888-992-4278, and you can get through right now.
You're listening to an encore presentation of Invest Talk. Please call with your questions and comments, though, 888-99-CHART, 888-99-CHART, and Steve will answer them on the next Invest Talk.
Hey, guys, I just started checking out your podcast, and I've been really enjoying the content. Nonetheless, I'm 22, about to turn 23, and I just had a quick question about investing since I just started working full-time. I plan to utilize my company's 401k match and make my own contributions to like a general retirement fund. However, my question was more for like personal investing and what would make the most sense to kind of fight off inflation for money that's just sitting in a checking account I have right now. Thank you very much. And I look forward to hearing back. Thank you.
Now, if this is like emergency money sitting on the sidelines or money you have set aside for some specific purchase, you don't expose that to the stock market. It's too dangerous. And I know you're not making any money on that money. I know that. But at 22, you want to be pretty aggressive in the market. You know, 22, you've got a lifetime. And yeah, the market's going to fall 50% at some point in your life. It will definitely fall that much sometime in your life. But what you do is you buy more when it happens. Don't run from the market. Don't be scared of it. But if you're just sitting on the sideline with cash and you don't want to expose it to the stock market because you have a specific purpose for it, there's not a lot of things you can do to make money. You know, it's just not, because the Federal Reserve has made sure you can't make money on your money markets or your CDs or even the bonds. You know, so it's difficult. I do think that's one of the reasons why the market will drive higher. I really think that's
888-99-CHART is our number, 888-992-4278. Avin in San Ramon, how you doing, Avin?
I got a quick question. I have two kids, 12 and 10. I started putting money for their education.
Okay.
So far, I put in about $22,000. It's hard to gauge as to how much the expenses would be. So on an annual average, what do you think I should be putting in?
Are you putting them in a 529 plan?
Yes, it's a 529 plan by Charles Schwab.
Okay. Is that 529 in California or is it Illinois? Is it?
It's Illinois.
Now, people probably ask me, how did I know that? Well, yeah. The reason why I know that is each state sponsors a educational called a 529 plan. Each state has its own. And why did I say Illinois? Because I know Illinois has a very good plan.
Yeah.
Therefore, they're selling it a lot. California's plan is just okay.
Yeah.
If you live in California, you can buy any state plan you want. You don't necessarily. It's not money that has to be spent in Illinois. You can spend it anywhere in the United States, but it is for college education.
That's true, yeah.
College. Okay. Next question, Evan, you have to ask is your child, are they going to go to Berkeley or Harvard? Or are they going to go to a regular college, you know, like a USC or UCLA?
One of those Cal colleges, either USC, UCLA, or Stanford, Berkeley. One of those things.
Okay, so, okay, yeah. Good. Because, you know, the expenses on the various colleges dramatically change.
Yeah.
Remember, you don't have to come up with all the money for the education. They can get college student loans for some of it. So you're just helping them. You don't have to, you know, if you make a ton of money and you want to, you can.
Yeah.
But you don't have to have all the money for their education. Just think of this way. It's going to cost about $20,000 to $30,000 a year for college.
Okay.
From that number back, and they're 8 to 10 years old?
That's right. 10 and 12. So.
Okay, 10 and 12.
Yeah.
Figure then, you know how many years you have. You have 6 to 8 years each.
Yeah.
Okay, and your money will make about 6 to 10% a year. So if you were real generous, you can add 10% to 22,000 compounded.
Oh, okay. So
those are the kinds of numbers you play with.
Okay.
And that means you're going to have, you know, if you're going to have all of it, you've got a lot of work to do. I wouldn't suggest you have to have all of it. You don't. I know my wife's parents pay for the first year, and then you're on your own for the rest of the year. Some pay for the school, but not the room and board, so they had to borrow a student loan. Student loans are so easy to get, Evan, that you won't have any problem.
That's right. It's been about 3 years since I started, and then I'm adding about anywhere between $2,000 to $3,000 a year for each account. So,
I think that's very, very good. For the average working guy, that's a very good number.
All right. That's good. Thank you.
Thanks, Evan. Appreciate the call.
Bye-bye.
Our InvestTalk mission is to help you make better investing decisions. To do that on your own, thumbs up or thumbs down choices based on good, solid investing principles. But we need your questions to keep us on track. 888-99-CHART or click on Contact Steve or Contact Justin on InvestTalk.com.
Yes, I enjoy your broadcast. I have a question. I have a life insurance policy, and I'm 65 years old. The policy is for thinking about my kids' future when I'm gone, to leave it to them. It's a $200,000 policy, and I'm paying $206 a month because I know it's a little high because of my health issues, but I was wondering what you thought of this investment. Thank you very much.
Okay, we've talked about life insurance before, and I have a background in insurance. That's why I started with. I have no problem with people buying a term life policy for a specific length of time for a specific purpose. Most of the time I'm talking to younger people who should have life insurance because they're married, they have a couple of kids, and if one of the breadwinner dies suddenly, that income's got to be replaced for a while. You know, so that's a really good reason to have life insurance. If you're older and you want to just leave money to your children, your grandchildren or whatever, and you're using life insurance to do that, that's a reason to have life insurance. I just don't think it's a great reason to have life insurance. And I'm hoping it's a term life policy that you have, $206 a month. I need that a lot more information from you. Can you afford $206 a month? Is it easy to pay? Is it a term life, whole life, universal life? What kind of policy is it? Is a premium flat or is it going to rise as you get older? Because what happens if you're on a fixed income and you get older and older and the premium keeps going up every year, pretty soon you're going to cancel it because you can't afford it anymore. And then, of course, the next year you'll die. And you paid all this premium and got nothing for it. So there's so much more information I need before I can answer your question. Again, buying life insurance for a purpose is a good idea. But a lot of people buy it because someone sold it to them. They don't have a good reason to own it. The broker who sold it to you has a good reason for you to own it, so he can make a big commission. That's his reason. Okay, they're not all that way, but you know what I mean. So you got to have a reason for life insurance. And life insurance to me is you buy term life and invest the rest. Because whole life, universal life, they try to talk you into a higher premium so you can be an investment and you can make a lot more money. Well, it just costs a lot more money too. The fees are expensive. And then they talk you, well, then, you know, you can borrow your own money later on down the road. Therefore, you don't have to pay. That's a rotten idea. So there's a lot more questions I need. You're listening to Invest Talk, everybody. I'm Steve Peasley. We want to answer your questions. Our listener line number is always ready for you. 888-99-CHART. Beginning our experience, we're here to answer your questions.
You're listening to an encore presentation of Invest Talk. Please call with your questions and comments, though, 888-99-CHART, 888-99-CHART, and Steve will answer them on the next Invest Talk.
Hey, Steve and Justin, this is Brandon from Northern California. I had a question on Roth IRA accounts. I'm sure you've answered it before, but I do not recall. So when you're doing it, I know it's a tax-deferred account until you retire and withdraw it, because it's already tax money that's put in. I'm just curious about the dividend earnings. Are they different than the regular growth earnings, or what's the deal on that? I appreciate the show. I'll listen for your answer on the podcast. Thanks.
So the dividends in a Roth and a regular IRA, the dividends are in the Roth and the regular IRA. So whatever paid in dividends is still there. You can reinvest them wherever you want inside the Roth IRA. When you withdraw that money in a regular IRA, that money is taxed as income for the year that you withdraw it. For dividends in a Roth IRA, it's treated just like anything else. You're never taxed on that money. Never taxed as long as it stays forever. It's the Roth. You don't have to pay taxes on Roth. Okay? So there's no taxes on the dividends.
Let's go to Jim in Claremont. Hi, Jim.
Hi, Steve. Thanks for taking my call.
Appreciate you making it.
How do you pick a sector that's going to be performing well for the next month or 2 months?
Okay. Fair enough, and a good question. A very good question. Trying to figure out what sectors are moving in relationship to each other is something that we do constant work on. It is something that is very difficult but doable. There are certain websites. CBS MarketWatch, one of our partners, has a sector analysis area. They have charts, and they show you the sectors. You can see the sectors intertwine with each other on a chart, which ones are moving up through the other sectors. It's pretty obvious, and that's how you have to do. You have to go to Yahoo Finance or CBS MarketWatch or one of those other CNN Money and find the sector analysis in there and figure out what sectors are moving up. Also, the Investor's Business Daily newspaper once a week has a sector analysis. And it talks about sectors and which ones are moving up and which ones are the highest rated. And you can find it. It's out there. It just takes a little bit of work.
But that's all past performance, right? That's not necessarily what's going on in the future.
Well, nothing will tell you what's going to happen in the future. But what it will do is it'll tell you, if you watch, it'll tell you what sectors are moving up and have been moving up. Uh-huh. And that's really what you're looking for. You're looking for the moving sectors. Doesn't have to be the top one or two sectors. It can be the 10th or 12th sector. As long as it moved from 3 weeks ago, the 18th sector, to 2 weeks ago, the 15th sector, to last week, it's the 10th sector, to this week, it's the 6th sector. You know that all the stocks in that sector have been moving up.
Okay, well, thanks very much, Steve. Appreciate it.
Jim, I appreciate the call, and thank you for that. I think the sector question was very, very good, and I think everybody should be paying attention to the sectors they're in.
InvestTalk is made possible by KPP Financial. InvestTalk hosts Steve Peasley and Justin Klein are the principals of KPP Financial, and they are independent financial advisors. This means they place their clients' interests ahead of the firm's. As part of that commitment, KPP Financial practices parallel investing, where Steve and Justin's accounts participate with client investments at equal prices and percentages. You can learn more about parallel investing and the other KPP Financial programs at investtalk.com. The phone lines are open. Steve and Justin welcome your questions. Call now, 888-99-CHART.
888-99-CHART, 888-992-4278. We're going to go talk to John in Walnut Creek. How are you doing, John?
Hi, very good. Thanks for taking my call.
Appreciate it.
Just calling to get your advice. My wife and I are 37 years old, and we both maxed out our 401k. We maxed out our Roth. We have two young kids. We put away about $200 into each one of their 529 plans. What advice do you give for additional savings that we have? Do we put it in a CD, or I don't want to just leave it in savings. So,
John, first of all, do you have money set aside for emergencies?
Yes.
Okay. Now, do you have a mortgage?
Yes.
And what kind of mortgage is it? A 30-year fix? A 15-year fix?
It's a 30-year fix.
Okay. Do you pay extra on it every month?
No, we don't.
It says you're maxing out your 401k. You're putting money aside for your children. You have enough emergency money set aside. The next step I would do is, do you have any credit card debt?
No.
Then I probably pay a little extra on my mortgage every month.
Okay.
What I did for years is you write out a check for the mortgage payment, you write out another check for $200 or $100, whatever you're going to do, and you write on that check, apply to the principal. That takes your principal down every month. And then what happens is as that eats down the principal, more of the normal monthly mortgage checks goes to the principal too.
Yeah, so I guess you're kind of earning money on this. Saving money from not paying so much interest.
Exactly. If you ever figured out a 30-year fixed, you're actually paying, after 30 years paying that payment, you'll be paying like 2.5-3 times the amount of the money you borrowed. Did you know that?
Yeah, that's very good advice. Yeah. You're investing in real estate.
Exactly. You're taking that investment, pulling it down. That real estate, it's a real estate investment. That's all it is. If you have those other things already set up, that is a very good way to invest in money because you're already maxing out your retirement account. So that's important. And you're already putting money aside for your kids' education. That's very important. You don't have any credit card debt. What else can you do? Get that mortgage on you in your late 30s now. You want to have that mortgage paid off by the time you're in your 50s.
Yeah, that'll be good.
It will work if you do this. It will. You will have that done. You will.
Okay.
John, I appreciate the call.
Best advice as always. Thank you very much.
Thanks, John. I appreciate it. You can call right now and be part of the program. Let's hear about what your talking point is. 888-99-CHART, 888-992-4278, and you can get through right now.
eBay Motors is here for the ride. Remember when you first saw the potential? And then through some elbow grease, fresh installs, and a whole lot of love, you transformed 100,000 miles and a body full of rust into a drive that's all your own. Look to your left. Look to your right. It is official. No one's got a ride like this. There's nothing else that sounds like, feels like, or looks like the set of wheels in your garage. With over 122 million parts, you can make sure your number one ride or die stays running smoothly, so there's no limit to how far you can take it. Brake kits, turbochargers, engines, exhaust kits, roof racks, LED headlights, bumpers, whatever your baby needs, eBay Motors has it. And with eBay Guaranteed Fit, it's guaranteed to fit your ride the first time, every time, or your money back. Plus, at these prices, well, you're burning rubber, not cash. Keep your ride or die alive at ebaymotors.com. Eligible items only. Exclusions apply. At this point, I think almost everyone has heard how generative AI promises to bring us to the next industrial revolution. AI is already shaping society with an impact on daily life that echoes the transformative significance of electricity or the internet. As we take steps to embrace the potential of generative AI, we need to remain vigilant with regard to its exploitability. This is where HackerOne comes in. HackerOne's AI Red Team addresses the novel challenges of AI safety and security for businesses that are launching new AI deployments. The HackerOne approach involves targeted offensive testing by harnessing the collective skills of ethical hackers who are proficient in AI and prompt hacking. In short, AI Red Teaming is the practice of stress testing AI models and deployments to make sure they can't be tricked into providing information beyond their intended use, and that security flaws can't be exploited to access confidential data or systems. HackerOne seamlessly integrates with your existing tools to enhance communication and collaboration across development, security, and IT teams. So, stay ahead of the game in the battle against cyber threats with HackerOne's Attack Resistance Platform. Learn more at HackerOne.com. That's HackerOne.com, HackerOne.com.
You're listening to an encore presentation of Invest Talk. Please call with your questions and comments, though, 888-99-CHART, 888-99-CHART, and Steve will answer them on the next Invest Talk.
Hey, guys, long-time listener. My name's Adam. I'm unfortunately having to move probably in the early coming of the year, and housing market has just gone up ridiculously, and I'm debating, do I just go ahead and buy because it'll go up more, or should I rent while it goes back down, if it will, but I hate, you know, wasting money renting as well. I don't know, do you think there'll be like a, I know a housing market's not going to have a crash again, but do you think it'll come back down possibly? Anyways, I appreciate it, and I'll be waiting for your response. Thank you, guys.
All right, now, there's a few things I want to unpack with that question. Number one is when people say that renting is throwing away money. I think that is one of the biggest myths that's out there in the finance world. Now, certainly if you're buying a house for cash, you don't pay interest, right? But 90%+ of people who are buying their primary residence are borrowing money. And guess what? When you borrow money, you're renting money, right? So what you have to understand is there's a cost to that money that you're borrowing. Okay, you're throwing away that interest as well, especially early on in a mortgage, right, where the majority of your mortgage payment is going towards interest, not going to principal, not going to equity, right? So that's first thing. Don't think that renting is necessarily throwing away money. It gives you more flexibility, doesn't tie you to a particular home or area. You can move, you know, every year, right? There's lower maintenance costs. So there are some underappreciated things about renting. And I say when you buy a primary residence, you have to think of it as a utility. If it goes up in value, great. Is that something to consider? Yes. The investment side, yes. But too many people make it the primary reason that they're buying a home. Having a home go up in value should never be your primary reason for buying a home. The utility. Do you love it? Do you like living there? Are you going to be happy there? Are you going to be able to hold it for a long period of time? And that's the answer to your question is, should you buy? If you think you're going to stay there for 8, 10+ years, probably, right? Because the cost of renting or cost of closing on a mortgage, right? Going through potentially a downturn in sometime in the next 5, 7 years, which is certainly possible. You have to be able to ride through that. So you're not selling the bottom, right? You're not caught in a situation where, oh, I want to move, but I'm underwater, or it's a bad time to sell. So that's anybody right now. You want to buy a home? Make sure you have a long-term time horizon for that particular home. Don't think about, oh, am I going to make money on this home? Think about, what is the utility? Can I afford the monthly payments? And am I holding it long-term? And I think in near-term, and this it's different between regions, inventory is too low. What happens with the housing market, I think, is entirely predicated on government action. Housing prices are a political utility, just like stock prices are now. And so governments are going to step in and do what they can to try to stave off a housing crash, a stock market crash. And that's where we're at right now. At the end of this year, there's supposed to be a moratorium. The moratorium on foreclosures and evictions are supposed to be up. Well, I'm sure I have the stimulus package that they're talking about is to extend that, right? How long does government extend the foreclosure moratorium? Meaning all those 7+ million people that are on forbearance for their mortgage, it's extended out longer. It means those people don't go into foreclosure. They don't get added to the housing supply that's out there for sale. So it's really all about what government action will be. Just like the Fed pushing mortgage rates down, flooding that money, that market with cash, and that's why you can borrow at sub 3% rates right now.
888-99-CHART is our number, everybody. You can reach us. We have lines open, 888-992-4278. John in Hayward. How are you doing, John?
Doing fine.
Thanks for calling.
Thanks. I had a question. I got a TIA Cref account, and I'm not really clear on how to spread my money out. for retirement. Okay.
You sound youngish, John. How old are you?
33.
Perfect. You're a young guy. Young guy. And so you have a TF Kreft account. Now, they give you lots of choices, if I remember right, of mutual funds to buy.
Yeah.
Okay, what I would do, you got a pen or a pencil?
Yeah.
And this is good for everybody out there, not just for John. If you're John's age group, if you're under 40, let's say, number one, you need to be aggressive. So stay away from bond funds. Stay away from bond funds, okay? Stay away from balanced funds.
Okay.
Because they have bonds in them, usually. I want you to be in the small cap, mid cap, and large cap growth and value funds, okay? Have maybe 25% in the small cap stocks. Find a mutual fund that says we are small cap growth or small cap value. Go with 25% of your money. 25% in mid cap, mid-sized companies. They call them mid cap. Capitalization is what that means. Mid-sized company. And they'll say that. They'll say that in their, they're usually in their title. And then 25% in large cap. And I would lean on growth, large cap, mid cap, small cap growth versus value. So split up the money. You can have 4, 5, 6 mutual funds. And the last 25%, John, I want you to have an international.
Okay.
International. Good luck, John. Call me if you want any more help on that, okay?
Beautiful. Thank you.
Thanks, John. Appreciate the call. 888-99-CHART is our number. 888-992-4278.
Managing multiple mutual funds, researching professional services, where to put your savings. If it's about money and if it's important to you, we want to know more about it. We're here for you. 888-99-CHART is how to reach Steve or Justin right now on InvestTalk.
Hi, this is Ari in Atlanta. I'm actually calling because I wanted to include my daughter, she's 15, in investments, but I don't know how I should get her started. So just wanted to put a question out. Thanks. Bye.
Well, the first thing I would say is if she has a job, I would try to open up a Roth IRA for her if she can. She doesn't have to actually fund it. But if she can just have a little bit of a job, earned income, whatever that is, you can put that money into a Roth IRA account. Okay. So I would think about that if you can. And having a little part-time job, not a bad thing. I know it might be a little harder than usual right now, but I think that'd be good for her. Next, if that's not the case, she doesn't have a job, then just I would open a brokerage account for benefit of maybe her name. Now, Steve and I differ a little bit on new investors. I always think, especially in today's world, now with no commissions, it's easy to put a few hundred dollars in, get them used to investing, and I like to invest in individual companies. Steve would probably say indexing, but I like the individual company route because it allows young investors to start to understand how companies work, invest in the companies that they like, right? Maybe they're on TikTok a lot and they want to buy Oracle, right? Maybe they're on Instagram and they want to buy Facebook, right? Maybe they have an iPhone, they love Apple, they want to buy Apple. And it gets them a little more involved in connection to stock market and then the real life things that are happening. So that's the way I would get them started and start to learn, but with a very small dollar amount.
Let's go to Julia and Julian.
Hi. I have a question. I'm about 55 years old, and I'm a novice and don't really know where to start.
Okay.
I would like to get into the market probably with a mix of stocks and bonds and cash.
Okay.
I'm wondering what percentage you would recommend of each one.
There is a rule of thumb. It depends on you and how aggressive and how much money you want to invest. You know, if you're just starting out, I would be very timid about getting in the market right now.
Okay.
Your experience level is very low, so you want to be very careful. There's a rule of thumb that your age dictates how much bonds you should have. So if you're 55, 55% of your money should be in bonds. I'm not buying that rule of thumb because there are times when being in bonds is just terrible and times when they're better to be in bonds. The time not to be in bonds is when interest rates are low because interest rates will probably rise. You're not getting very good yield. So it'd be better to go and do dogs of the Dow, high dividend paying, very big companies will get you more money, generally speaking. And don't buy too much of any one company. There's some rules. We never, for instance, I never buy more than 3 to 5% of a company, my overall portfolio. So that means you have a number of stocks. You can also invest using ETFs. You know what those are? Exchange-traded funds. They're like mini mutual funds, and you can buy sectors. Let's say you think the medical sector is a good place. Well, there's a number of ETFs that you could just, you give you instant diversification by ETF. You might want to start with the ETFs.
Now, as far as the taxes on ETFs, are you taxed on the gains like you would be in a mutual fund?
Yes. Only when you sell it, though. And unlike the mutual funds where you get capital gains distributed to you, that doesn't happen in ETFs.
Oh, okay.
Only when you sell it, like a stock. You make gains or you have losses, that's when you have to pay the taxes.
Okay.
Thanks, Julie. Appreciate the call. Good luck.
Thank you.
Hope it works for you. 888-99-CHARTER is our number, everybody. You can reach us. We have lines open, 888-992-4278. How about we go to Mike in Fremont? How you doing, Mike?
Oh, doing pretty good. How are you up there?
Down here, I'm doing great.
Good. I've been listening for about a year, and this is my first time calling in.
Well, thanks.
And if I could I just take the answer on the air on this? And it may be just common knowledge, but it seems to me on my mutual funds that they all seem to take a dive in December.
And there is a specific reason, Mike.
Okay,
it's not just yours. Yeah, you can take it off the air. That's okay.
Yeah, good. Thanks.
Sure. Mike, it's just not yours. It's many, many, many mutual funds do this. And this is why. It's very, very simple. In December, sometimes in November, many times in December, these mutual funds do what's called a capital gains distribution. Now, if you think about it, it'll make sense. Think about what a mutual fund does. It buys and sells stocks all year long, right, inside the mutual fund. When it does that, hopefully, it's making money, and if it's making money, it's incurring capital gains tax. But it doesn't pay capital gains tax, just like you don't until you do your taxes. Well, they have to distribute, mutual funds have to distribute those capital gains to you so that you can put them on your taxes. So what will happen at the end of the year, if a mutual fund has a high turnover rate, meaning they buy and sell, buy and sell, buy and sell a lot during the year, and they've made money on those buy and sells, they would distribute those capital gains to you in the end of the year. Let's say the mutual fund is selling for $10 a share, and one day in December, you see it go to $9.50. All of a sudden, one day, they never tell you what day it is, so you can't sell it the day before, you do not know. They actually give you that 50 cents, by the way. They give that 50 cents to you. You'll see it coming into your portfolio if you're looking carefully. And then you have to pay the taxes on capital gains on your return when you get your 1099. So what it is, it's that jump down in November, December in one day is a capital gains distribution. That's what that's called. Many, many mutual funds do it. The ones who don't do it are the ones that don't have capital gains distributions. They don't have the capital gains. Let's say your mutual fund buys a stocks in December of one year, and they never sell those stocks for a full year. You'll not have any capital gains distribution, and the net asset value of the cost of the fund will not go down. So one thing we kind of look at is the capital gains liabilities, which you can find out, by the way, during the year. We actually cut back a couple of mutual funds because we didn't sell them outright, but we expected large capital gains distributions, and we were trying to avoid it. Sometimes you're successful, sometimes you're not. So, Mike, that's what that is. It's very common, and it's in the end of the year, and it happens a lot. Don't think you're doing anything wrong or they're doing anything wrong. That's not the truth. We're going to go to Jimmy and San Ramon. Hi, Jimmy.
Hey, Steve. I'm a new listener, new to this whole investing thing. I actually have a investment set up with my union, but I've been looking to spend maybe $1,000 and get into my own stocks, building my own stuff, and I was wondering what you thought would be a good one to get into with that smaller amount of money.
Well, just to let you know, we can answer questions, but I can't give you recommendations. How old are you?
24.
This is a great time to start thinking about it because the market over time will give you, 10%. That's what it's done over time for the last 7,500 years. Mm-hmm. 10% return. The question is that a lot of people don't get that return because they have no clue what they're doing. One of the problems that most people do have is they let their emotions get involved with their decision making.
Mm-hmm.
when they see their prices are going down and the stock market's crashing, they get out. You gotta look longer term. When they see the market going up and just up, they put more money into it. Mm-hmm. I'm telling you, if you really want to be successful, when you are at your saddest and you feel like you just wasted money putting in the market, that's when you put more in.
Uh-huh.
And when you're at your happiest, that you're making a ton of money over the years, and look at this stock, my stocks went up the last 6 months to 100%. Sell. Take it out. Take some profits. You play your own emotions that way, you'll be a lot better off. So the one thing you need to do is figure out how to evaluate stocks. How to determine whether this is a stock that's overpriced or is this stock on sale.
Uh-huh.
Stick with the price of stocks that are on sale, but at the same time, those same on-sale stocks, you want to be in an uptrend on a chart. In other words, the stock has been moving up consistently for a while. That's how you pick stocks.
Uh-huh.
If you give me a call, I will be happy to give you some value methods that are not very difficult.
Uh-huh.
And then on the websites, there's a ton of places. One of the easiest way to evaluate a stock, and I'm going to give it to you right now, is take next year's growth rate of a stock. Multiply that times its earnings estimates by the experts for next year. Remember, stocks look forward, not backward. So if the earning for next year is going to be $1 per share, it's always a per share issue. If the earnings is going to be $1 per share next year, and it's growing at 20% a year, multiply 20 times $1, and the stock price fair value is about $20.
Sounds good.
Okay?
Great.
Good luck, and you'll love it. I started at 21. Thanks, Jimmy.
Thank you.
Bye-bye. Now, if you have a question about a stock or an IRA, college savings plan, well, maybe buying a house, mortgages, reverse mortgages, we're here for you. 888-99-CHART, 888-992-4278.
You're listening to an encore presentation of Invest Talk. Please call with your questions and comments, though, 888-99-CHART, 888-99-CHART, and Steve will answer them on the next Invest Talk.
Justin, Steve, Matt from South Florida. You guys are really good about talking about money printing and monetary debasement. I am of the opinion that I think some level of money printing is going to continue, the easy way out politically for both sides of the duopoly. So my question is this. We all know the reasons that gold, copper, et cetera, Bitcoin are hedges against money printing and inflation. Generally speaking, would you consider equities to be a hedge against inflation? Meaning, all else equal, if the money printing continues, do stocks just inflate the way that goods and services do? Would you consider equities relatively safe, or do you weight more into crypto and things like gold, silver, copper? Because equities aren't a perfect hedge against money printing. Thanks again. I'll listen for the answer.
Stocks have always been able to stay up and exceed inflation. So if they continue printing money, the idea is they will inflate. We have inflation. And what assets do we hold? Stocks always are able to hold their own, going up, even during times of high inflation. Because what happens is you're CEO of a corporation. What do? If inflation comes, you start raising your prices because the input prices of the things you make are going up. So you just pass it along. And now everybody knows there is inflation, so you don't have that much resistance in raising your prices from the public. Right now you would because there's no inflation. The public see prices go up. Hey, they say, there's no inflation. Well, I'm not buying that. But if you're a CEO and you have the excuse that inflation is in the system and everybody knows it, you get to raise prices and keep your profit margins. And so many times they go up. So no, don't worry about that part. Stocks will work fine in an inflationary period. It hasn't passed. That's why I'm saying it. Appreciate the question.
Good advice. Spread your money around. Stick to a well-thought-out plan for carefully divvying up your money so no single calamity will destroy your portfolio. Want to talk about it? 888-99-CHART is how to get through right now.
Let's go to Bob and El Sobrante. How you doing, Bob?
Hey, I've heard you talk before about on balance, but I don't exactly know what it is or how to use it as information. Is it a short-term or a long-term statistic?
Well, it's not based on length of time. Let's start off with that.
Okay.
You know what volume is, right?
Sure.
And for everybody else, volume is just a number of traded shares in a day on a particular stock. And you'll hear the stock market say, 1 billion shares traded today. Well, that's the volume of the whole market. But you also look at volume of an individual stock. The volume of shares traded on a daily basis is something that a lot of people look at. Well, is it up volume or down volume? Is it volume that's good or bad? Are people selling the stock or are they coming into that? Now, obviously, if you relate the price movement of that stock to the volume, if there's a lot of volume, the stock collapsed by half, you know that was a very bad day. Most days, the stock is moving sideways or up and down slowly, and you don't know if there's more up or down volume. You just know there's volume. But when you look at on-balance volume, that's looking at volume a little bit more closely. And what that does, for every uptick in the price of the stock, let's say 1,000 shares are bought with a penny higher than they were from someone bought it from just the last sale. It's a penny higher. That would be up volume of 1,000 shares because it's on an uptick. The next volume could be down one penny, 500 shares. Okay, down a downtick. But the on-balance volume on those two trades would be uptick 500 shares. So on-balance volume adds the number of shares on upticks and subtracts the number of shares on downticks and draws a line. So if the stock price is moving up and you see the on-balance line moving up, that means there's more buyers buying more stocks on upticks. If the price of the stock is moving up and the on-balance volume is moving down, that means that there's more volume on the downticks, but there's a higher price movement on the upside. Well, all it does, Bob, is trying to tell you where the pressure is coming from. Is it coming from the sellers or from the buyers?
Like you were saying, even if the stock price is going down, sometimes the on-balance volume can be positive, and that's what confuses me.
That is very true. And in fact, you're looking for that divergence where the stock price goes one way and the on-balance volume goes the other way, because that's when it tells you the most. So let's say the stock price is going down, but the on-balance volume is going up. That's telling you more buyers are coming in as that stock price goes down. They're buying a lot more shares, meaning that stock is going to stop going down and turn around and go up because there's a lot of interest in the stock on the downticks. The on-balance volume is going down and the stock price is moving up. Uh-huh. Watch out. There's more sellers as the price goes higher. People are taking profits.
Well, that's great. Thanks for that explanation.
I hope that's clear, Bob.
That helped.
Thank you. Before we go, you can see more about today's topic. Go to investtalk.com. You want to contact me directly? Easy. Leave a message on the machine or go to investtalk.com. I'm money manager Steve Peasley, and I want to thank you for listening.
Because of the nature of the interactive dialogue inherent in the format of this program, it's important for the listener to understand that not all comments made will apply to them specifically. Nothing said shall be taken to be investment advice, or shall statements on this program be considered an offer to buy or sell securities. Such advice is rendered solely on an individual basis, and at times will require that the investor review a prospectus before investing. InvestTalk is a copyrighted program of Klein Pavlis Peasley Financial, a registered investment advisor, which retains all rights. For more information regarding KPP's investment advisors, call 1-800-557-5461. Steve Peasley is President and Justin Klein Chief Executive Officer of Klein Pavlis Peasley Financial. And they thank you for listening and welcome your comments or questions on our 24-hour listening line at 888-99-CHART.